Thanks, Bob. Yeah, I think one thing we can all agree on in the audience about genomics as we started to incorporate that into our national cattle evaluations and trying to do something with it is that it costs money. And in a lot of ways, it's cost a fair bit of money to get enough data. I know several breed associations have had real efforts in trying to get to some level of, say, 1,000 proven bulls in order to start incorporating genetic predictions, genomic predictions into their national cattle evaluations right now. With that, I'm here to say that we have the same problem in research and that it costs a lot of money if we want to try to look at some of these novel traits and go forward with being able to do something with that that's going to actually impact and deliver eventually genetic predictions and based on the genomic markers to the cattle producers. So I just want to lay some of that out right now. We use a whole lot in research of these high-density arrays that are a little higher than the 50K that you usually hear about in our cattle evaluations now. We're generally going to something like a bovine HD, which is 700,000 markers rather than these 50,000 markers. Part of that's because we're trying to train on multiple breeds. Part of that's just trying to increase the resolution because some of what we're able to do is on a single marker basis a little bit. It helps out. Having it scattered a bit more. And this is going to get worse or is getting more costly even if we start to talk about sequencing, which I know several speakers have been talking about here at this meeting and in previous BIF meetings here over the last few years. Well, if we look at running that array on 96 animals, it costs about $15,000 for us. Break that down however you want. The average array costs $155. And we know that we need to try to save some money because 96 animals, on most studies anyway, doesn't get us very far in terms of genetic prediction, okay? We need to get to thousands of animals instead. And pooling, which we've talked about a little bit before, myself at some BIF meetings and my colleague, Dr. Tara McDonald, has, I think, a few years ago on some fertility data, is one way we can use to try to decrease that cost a tremendous amount. It's essentially what pooling is, and I'll say this in a way that anybody with molecular experience won't like me very well, but essentially all we're doing is trying to put this DNA into a blender so that these animals are compared fairly and that the DNA is coming out is equally likely for any molecule of that DNA to be one animal versus another animal in that pool. Okay, so basically we're trying to standardize a pool, mix it together, and then spread it over the DNA chip in each of these individual wells, okay, so that we can get the hybridization that's going to take place with that DNA molecule to light up these beads. And for those of you that have talked about genomics and haven't really heard all of this, obviously my chemistry is really bad here, but what essentially is going to happen is you get some analysis type of machines on those little cells in there, and those cells end up fluorescing with a green or a red color, a dye, for all the beads in here. There's basically, on this array, Tara, I'd say there's probably, for each of those little wells on there, there's somewhere around 3.5 to 4 million beads, something like that, that each of those beads will show a color at an intensity of green or red, depending on which alleles are annealing to those beads, which ones are attaching themselves to those beads, okay? And that's how we get genotypes out. You have a computer system then that's able to read those beads and see how much green and how much red you see for each one of those markers that are involved in these chips. And depending on how much green or red there is, you call a genotype, okay? Well, in pooling versus on individual animals, we kind of have something that's either red or green or some mixture of the two, depending on whether the animal is homozygous one direction, that'd be red, homozygous another direction, that'd be green, or some mixture if it's heterozygous, okay? Well, the nice thing about these beads and there being so many of them and the level of fluorescence that's shown in here is with pooling, we get this mixture that can be somewhere on a gradient in between that's more defined even than what the red, green, or in the middle is. And basically what we're able to get out of there is instead of an estimate of the actual genotype of an individual animal, we get the frequency of the genotypes of the animals for that pool of animals that's involved, okay? So if you think of a continuum, right, where you go high is red, that would mean that every animal is 100% homozygous one way for the marker on that we're looking at that one time. Go down and add more green and take away more red, they're slowly getting more or less heterozygous and more probability of intermediate frequencies, and then get more and more green, and you end up being more toward the other homozygote, okay? So it's a frequency problem. And what's nice about this, then, is that we're able to use that frequency to basically say how different our pools are from each other and get an idea of whether animals for extreme phenotypes are segregating according to what that marker phase is. I'll get into that just a little bit more here coming up. I just want to hint at that this is just talking about the chip. We could be doing the exact same thing with pools on next-generation sequencing platforms as that becomes cheaper and try to get an idea of what the frequency calls are for pools of animals using sequence data. So this is more on DNA pooling. And what we do, basically, this is an example. Actually, Tara would have shown this a few years ago, taking an animals that are low for a phenotype. In this case, this was low fertility data. And high for a phenotype, this is high fertility data, meaning that over a couple different parities, they've had a high probability of being pregnant. A few different parities, they've had a low probability of being pregnant, probably mostly open cattle. And we basically cut the distribution off in this case. We could do this with any 0-1 data even easier. And the ones that had low pregnancy records, we put in one pool, set of pools. And the ones that had high pregnancy set of data, we put in another set of pools. And we look for those color patterns to see where markers differ in allele frequency. Based on those allele frequencies being different, we say that marker is probably important for fertility in this case. Okay? It's pretty cool. Lets you use a whole lot of phenotypic records and a tremendous savings because we're cutting the cost. If we put 100 animals in a pool, we're essentially cutting our cost by a factor of 100. So saving money. The government saving you money in my case, so don't hear that every day. So, okay. Right. Okay. So this is an idea. This is a statistical concept, and I don't want to go too deep into this. But this is the line, two lines that kind of show how to achieve a level of power at 80%, meaning we're going to find something. Just think of it that way. We're trying to achieve a level that says we're going to find something at this green line. And basically, the solid black line would be the number of, let me make sure I'm getting this right. This would be the number of pools that we would need to achieve the level of this black line would be an individual genotyping, okay? And the black line would be this number times 100. And I'm sorry, I don't have the notation on that quite right. But essentially, if we're going to have 10,000 animals almost here in individual genotyping, that's what this line would be for the black line, right? And we needed somewhere then around, let's just say, 8,500 to achieve 80% power in this study. We would need to have about 110 pools to achieve the same level of power, and we're cutting our cost then by a factor of around 90%. Okay, a little bit less. So, sorry if I went too long on that, but the point is here, it's not quite as efficient as individual genotyping, but we still need a whole lot less pools being run and a whole lot less animals involved using this pooling data. So essentially, this is another way to break that out. 112 pools instead of 100 pools on the individual genotyping of 96 animals apiece would achieve a power of 80%, where we needed around 9,000 animals to do it with individual genotyping. We need a few more animals, but the cost difference then is 1.4 million versus 40,000. Still a lot of money, but it's a whole lot less. Okay? So we've been pretty excited about this because it's allowed us to try to stretch out what we're able to do in terms of collecting, especially commercial data resources, and try to utilize that in a way that we can get some results to try to train maybe some of our genomic tests on. And got a lot of nice things doing this. As you can see, we've been looking at several different traits here and several different species right now. Reproduction's one of those, like I said, we've presented at some of these BAF meetings before. I'm going to focus in this on BRDC. I'm not going to go into what the importance of BRDC is, because I don't think you guys would be here if you didn't think it was important right now. Let's just say it's one of the biggest costs in our industry today, especially in the feedlot sector, and we need to do something about it if we can. Okay? So that's why we're here right now. We're trying to utilize as much data as we can get at it. And this is more data, as much as Matt said in the last talk that we have at the U.S. Meal Research Center, we need to try to get data from outside in order to try to do this well and fast. Okay? I'm going to spend not too much time on this, but just go into what we're doing with these pools then. And essentially, we're pooling these samples. We're working with GeneSeq and Lincoln on these combined DNA samples that come together from these 96 animals apiece, sending them to Lincoln. They analyze them, and we get back a level of fluorescence for green and red for each of the markers on this high-density chip right now. From the green and red, which is the X and Y here, think of X as green and Y as red, and a level of fluorescence associated with each of those, we get something called a pooling allele frequency, basically just a dumbed-down type of frequency estimate that we can then basically assume some statistical distributions about and try to tell if the two allele frequencies are different between the sets of pools we have for animals that are sick with BRDC somehow measuring and animals that are shown as healthy. Okay? Don't worry about the stats too much. I've got some more scientific goop here that's not terribly important, but it gives us a cutoff for how high we need to get to in order to say that this is an important effect or not an important effect in our statistical analysis. So these will be the basis for those of you that want to see it from the science perspective for how we call something significant or not. Okay? So our objective then for the first study I'm going to talk about and the one that we have results for is to identify S&P markers from this bovine HD chip that are associated with severe lung lesions in fed beef cattle, okay? And basically, for this method, we were able to sample over 10,000 lungs from a commercial abattoir, Nebraska beef processing plant with a throughput of around 2,500 head per shift. We went to there and were able to sample somewhere around 900 lungs a day based on whether animals going by us on the chain on the visceral table were either very much affected by lung lesions or very much unaffected by lung lesions, okay? And so somewhere around the neighborhood of 30% of the lungs that went by, we sampled either as being healthy or as being very, very sick. The majority of these lungs, and part of the reason why we had such a high lung lesion incidence overall, the majority of these came from animals that were raised without antibiotics. The processing plant, at least at the time that we were working with, I believe on Mondays and Fridays, I'm not sure that's quite right, end up killing some natural cattle. And what they didn't do, natural cattle at the time with some program called country of origin labeling, I think they went to Canadian cattle shortly after that. So we'd end up with from natural cattle, and then we'd end up with some cattle that often didn't have as much antibiotic or had source programs right after that because of cool. Basically, then, half of these 11,000 as a result of this were very, very sick based on their lung lesion incidence, and half approximately were mild and had no lung lesions. And what's kind of cool about this, and this is speaking as a geneticist who likes talking about contemporary groups and trying to keep animals in contemporary comparisons so that we can estimate things like heterosis and stuff like that, was that we were able to approximate the lot, which we think is a fair representation of the contemporary group the animals came from, based on the chain proximity of samples to one another. And part of the reason why we didn't sample all 2,500 or 2,400 that went through every day and only sampled 900 was the sampling protocol that we used on that chain. So if we see something going by like this, we had a trained scorer with us, our veterinarian from the Mineral Research Center was with us, and we go and we start to get out of whack. We sample the first five animals coming here, and they're all have lesions. We start to worry about getting out of balance a little bit with our lot, and that maybe we're over-representing a lot that might have something like 80% of the animals sick instead of something like 50-50, which, you know, is kind of optimal, right? And so we stopped if we got five in a row or something like that and waited till we got enough normals from around the same proximity to kind of balance out our sample a little bit and make sure that we're representing that group of animals that are coming from the lot. We didn't necessarily know on the visceral table where we were starting and where we were ending a lot, really, but I think we did a good job if we went in kind of groups of 10 or so of being able to approximate something like a contemporary group, a pin contemporary group effect coming from most of these feedlots. And I'll show you some evidence to that as we go. You can see this is more of an optimal strategy. You know, if we had no lesions, which we occasionally did have stretches where we'd have 100 animals almost go by and see about maybe six lesions on the whole group, we made sure we got the lesions out of those groups. That's some of the most valuable data we have, really. But we have to make sure then that we sample just one in the same proximity or two that are no lesions at the same time. Okay? So basically, we were with lung data, we were able to combine the cores into one, into pools on our own, 60 case, 60 control pools. Instead of mixing together DNA like I spoke about earlier, we were actually able to mix the lungs and digest that all at once because lungs are very homogeneous in their DNA content. So we were able to get a good sample of all the animals by mixing lungs rather than DNA. And then we used a standard extraction procedure to get DNA from that. So this is where I'm saying that our sampling procedure actually did a pretty good job. And what this is, you can think of this, these are each of the pools, and this is a tree diagram that kind of shows the genetic distance between each of the pools that we had involved in our study right now. So these circle ones are pools that have lesions, and the triangles are ones that have no lesions. And you can see that really they're kind of equidistant from each other, and that's a good thing. It means that most of the markers on the HD chip in general are not different between the cases and the controls, and we'd expect that, which means most markers do not affect BRDC incidence. Okay? This is another way to look at it right here, and basically this is the distance of each lung lesion pool, I think that was the triangles, right? Sorry. The circles are the lung lesion pools and the controls are the triangles. This is kind of the distance between each match pair from trying to sample at that same proximity on the chain, okay? And you can see that in general here, while not absolutely true with some of these outliers, which are the same outliers we saw here, probably a mixing problem more than a sampling problem, everything is closer to its neighbor that was sampled at the same time rather than to a bunch of the other group. And that's kind of what this is trying to show. This is one last diagram to look at that, and then I promise I'll stop talking about statistics too much. But this is kind of a measure then of the variation between all pools. And this is kind of the distance then between them, fairly high and fairly uniform, whether those pools are cases or controls or mixed across cases and control. If you matched, this is a measure of the distance between them. So we're getting better matching. We're getting more homogeneity within the animals that are sampled in close proximity to each other than we're getting across. It means we're doing a good job of controlling for things like common environment and common genetic sources. Okay. This is our results, and I don't want to dwell too long on this because this is just getting us started at going down genomics of BRDC overall. But this is a Manhattan plot that we've been seeing a lot in these kind of talks right now, And basically, the dots that are above these two lines are the ones that we need to interrogate a little bit more as we go forward. This is not quite a ready input into a whole genome selection national cattle evaluation right now, but we think we can start using some of these markers as priors with other data sets that we might start collecting and using BRDC data for standard national cattle evaluation types of training applications. So this is useful from a research perspective. It's not quite gold yet from a producer perspective, but I think this is a critical step to getting us started. And about a step away right now. So the nice thing is, this is again from the research perspective, is we're seeing genes that are nearby these peaks that I showed there on the chromosome that have to do with things that make a little bit of sense relative to lung lesions overall. There's some that are close to pathways for immunity. That makes a lot of sense that some of these genes might be near proteins that affect the immune system overall. Organ size, tumor suppression, I can see immunity things as I stretch there. One that's really interesting to me is this tissue regeneration, and part of the reason why we might have the contradiction occasionally where treatment records don't match lung lesions very well, because animals that get sick early may be healing over time and regenerating that lung tissue. And so part of what we're seeing here may not be susceptibility to BRDC, but might be for the ability of the animal to repair their internal organs over time before they get slaughtered. And I think that's kind of cool, because it's not really an avenue we've thought about with lung lesions much before. So we reduce the cost of genotyping tremendously and identify things that might be useful to reduce BRDC incidence and reliance on antibiotics. The chain sampling method approximates contemporary group of effects, I'd say, pretty well. And although this doesn't result in an input for national cattle evaluation, I think we're getting closer to something that we can use to parameterize models for national cattle evaluation as we start to get more BRDC individual genotyping records going. So I think it's a pretty cool result. And what's nice about this is it leads into our next project that we have a funded grant for, working with a set of feedlots in Nebraska, not to implicate, but we might have a representative of one of those here, Colorado and Kansas, to obtain treatment records from their databases that we can go use the tissue and pool based on treatment records. And what we hope to do then is look at the contrast between these feedlots treatment records and compare it to some of this lung lesion study, see where we have similarities and where we have differences in the results. Generally, we found it easiest now to go ahead and collect DNA. Feedlots typically don't run their cattle through more than once anymore. It's often implant on arrival, and that's it. And so sampling DNA for animals that are from really affected lots is not so easy at the yard. It's almost easier to go to the plant and collect tissue there, as long as we can get the ID of the animals at the same time. And that's what we've been doing. We find out what cattle are killing and what the lot incidence is. We head for the plant for the day those animals are going to be killed, and get DNA samples off of that. But we may get some from shoot side, depending on the feedlot that we're working with as well. And then we're trying to focus then on sampling pens that have high BRDC incidence so that we can get a good idea of and have the greatest potential for contrast among those markers that might be beneficial and not. We're hoping to obtain around 7,500 cases, so twice as many cases and controls from this study through cooperation with these feedlots. We're somewhere probably close to 1,800 right now between us and CSU collecting, but we're on a full track for this summer, and I think we'll get up over around 5,000, we hope, this summer, and get our 7,500 next year. And then from that, we'll use about approximately two-thirds of the data to do the same thing with the bovine HD chip, because it's still cheaper than sequencing overall. But then the remaining 2,500, we'll start to do sequencing and approaches with highlighting the regions of the genome that are flagged by the first analysis on the chip in order to get an idea, and some fine mapping on the genome and some validation overall of those chip results. So we're pretty excited about this. We've been really appreciated to our partners in the feedlot industry that have been sharing their data with us to do this, and we're hoping to get to make a real significant impact with this one combined with the lung lesion study and try to do something more about BRDC. So, as I said, we're hoping overall that we produce complementary results between these two studies. I think we've got a good chance of that. Tara says we will, so I'll throw that in there. And then we'll see this as an initial parameterization of future whole genome selection methods to use in national cattle evaluation as we go forward. Think we've got a good chance and hope to move forward really well. This is the folks from U.S. Mark that are involved in both the lung work and in the new grant work. Scientists, I didn't put myself on there, but I think that's obvious. So the remaining scientists that are in here are on the first column, technicians and a postdoc who's been amazingly helpful. J.R. Tate's been here too. And then the bottom in the grant that we're involved with CSU, these are Mark Enns as the PI on that, and we're also working with several other graduate students and undergraduates both in meats and in animal breeding to help us get more data from there. And most of all, thank you for the participating feedlots and plants that are helping us to collect this data. With that, I can take any questions on this, and thank you.